The Wildlife Explorer, a podcast by Essex Wildlife Trust, where we aim to inspire a lifelong love of nature. On this month's episode, we'll be heading to our nature nursery to find out about the benefits of wilder learning. So I'll be speaking to some of our nature nursery practitioners, parents, the children themselves, and author Patrick Barkham, who was a previous Forest School volunteer himself. Stay tuned. So I can't have a podcast about the nature nursery without hearing from the stars themselves, the children. So first off, what is their favourite thing about the nature nursery?
I like the hammocks.
Do you reckon I'd fit in one of those hammocks? I don't know if I'd fit in one of those, to be honest.
No,
I would fall out.
Playing in the woods.
So what are some of the favourite animals of the children at nature nursery?
My favourite. Badgers.
Do you know what this is?
There's a butterfly.
A butterfly.
I saw butterflies and they were everywhere. And
me and Dave
were trying to catch them.
Spiders.
Spiders? I bet you see a lot of spiders.
I see hundreds of spiders.
Can you tell me what animals do you have here at the nature nursery?
Crocodile.
They've got crocodiles at the nature nursery, which I think is pretty impressive. May not work for health and safety, but I'm impressed. So what do you do if it's raining? I reckon that's quite a common question that you get asked.
We splash in the puddles.
You splash in the puddles.
We splash in the puddles, we have fun. I always say, if your child hasn't gone home dirty, they haven't had a great day. They need to be covered in mud. Children love to lead and they love to explore and they should be allowed to get messy and just have fun in exploring in nature. It's so good for their emotional well-being, as well as all the other areas of learning, their physical development, like the uneven ground helps build their core strength. The climbing tree helps them build strength in their hands to then hold a pen at school. It's been magical to watch all the children grow.
Next up, we have an interview with Melanie Newton, our manager at the Nature Nursery. For anyone that doesn't know, can you tell me what the Nature Nursery is and why is it so special? So the Nature Nursery is a very unique nursery. It's pioneering. There isn't one day that's exactly the same, so it's very different, very varied, dependent on the children, dependent on the nature that flies above us, depends on the seasons, on the things that crawl beneath us, the things that we can see, and it also depends on what flies above us because we are in the kind of Heathrow of birds here in Great Wigborough. The nature nursery is very different to other indoor nurseries. It's very much based on the children, the individual needs of the children, and we tailor make the needs of the children to the enabling environments that we create. So we've got very different environments. We have a mud kitchen, we have a vegetable patch, we have a polytunnel, we have a beautiful Mongolian yurt, which has a log burner in. And we set the environments all around the children and those interests.
What sort of benefits do you find that it has?
So the benefits is, there are so many benefits to Nature Nursery. We do find that, especially with our very young children that join us at the age of two, we particularly see a huge ramp up in the children's vocabulary and their sentence structure. So a lot of children join us at the age of two with just a few word utterances, and within a few weeks they're actually speaking in sentences. So from a linguistic point of view, our children, we can see and track our children that they're developing the linguistic skills in their physical skills, because obviously we've got around the size of two football pitches here at Nature Nursery. That's the space that we have. So our children generally would probably navigate at least 2 to 3 miles a day in their typical day here. We've also noticed that our practitioners can do up to 7 miles a day here because obviously they go into all the different enabling environments. So from a linguistic point of view, to a physical point of view, but also from a personal social emotional point of view, our children are caring and nurturing for the seeds they grow in, for the invertebrates that they find, for the birds. I'll give you a beautiful example. We recently had sparrowhawk chicks in our woods, and the children could hear the mum crying out to the babies. So collectively the children decided actually to vacate the woods because it was the birds' woods rather than their woods. So the children really do nurture and care for the environment that we have here at Nature Nursery. Obviously their, you know, their communication skills, their math skills, we're able to be really expressive here at the Nature Nursery as well. So that's a little bit of information as to how that's different here at Nature Nursery.
That is incredible, and I've read some studies on wilder learning and benefits that outdoor learning can have, and it can benefit them in terms of their self-regulation, resilience, and even like being able to deal with stress later on in life. It can all be impacted by outdoor learning when they're younger, which is amazing. Do you sort of find that, I mean, for adults as well, but I find wildlife can really help bring people and especially children out in themselves. Do you find that it's amazing seeing their confidence develop as they are out in nature?
Definitely. I mean, confidence building is what we do here in every environment that we're creating. Our children are building confidence skills every day. So, for instance, when the children are in the woods and they're starting to see other children learning how to climb trees, how to use the rope walk, we can see that actually their confidence builds by the skillful interactions with our highly skilled staff team, how we're supporting those children. So we see that their confidence grows tenfold. And the fact that we have children aged from 2 to 5, the younger children learn from the older children and vice versa. The older children tend to nurture some of the younger children as well. So it's a win-win situation for our children. We see a lot of resilience building in particular because obviously our children are out in all weathers. We do say there's no such thing as bad weather, it's just bad clothing. So our children are really prepared for the outdoors. So that we see those building of resilience for our young children.
As part of this podcast episode, I've invited on for a clip. There's an author called Patrick Barkham, and he's written a book called Wild Child, and he used to be a volunteer forest school leader. But one of the stats that sort of shone out to me in the book is he said that in Australia there was a study done, and 82% of 3 to 5 year olds could identify the McDonald's M arches. But then in Britain it was 92% from 5 to 16 weren't able to identify an oak leaf. And it just sort of makes you realise how much we've lost touch with nature. Do you think that is the case?
Definitely, definitely. I mean, we are really fortunate. A lot of our children join us here with our families being really involved in nature as well. But we do find that the children are really interested in leaves, in invertebrates. Sometimes some of our children join us, especially the younger children, and they can be quite nervous when they see an ant or a woodlice crawl across a log. So we're here to skillfully support those children with their nurturing, and they do understand and they start nurturing those invertebrates or the birds that they see above them. Often if they see a bird of prey, which sometimes we have above, they run to the vole homes. Some of the children have made vole homes in the meadow, and they're really concerned, and because they know the life cycle of animals, that the bird of prey might come down and get the vole. So they are really concerned for the nature and the environment that we've created for here.
It's so clever how they make that connection, and also like the level of empathy that they have as well with wildlife is just phenomenal, isn't it?
It is. I mean, you know, our children can identify the differences between a millipede and a centipede. They can identify the different bird calls as well. A lot of our staff team as well have increased their knowledge since working here. So it's impacted the children, the families, but also our staff team.
When I interview people for the podcast, or even just sort of within the wildlife sector, and chat to people and say, oh, what made you so passionate about wildlife? 9 times out of 10, it will be some sort of experience or wild sort of childhood that they had. So it's so wonderful to see them have that now, and just to think, I wonder how it's going to impact them when they get older.
Definitely. I mean, that's something that we're really keen at the Trust to be able to try and track our children, so we can see, we know already the impact we're having on children's lives by them being absorbed into nature and developing that lifelong love of nature. So we would love, as a Trust, to be able to track our children in 10 years' time to see if actually they've gone on to, you know, be involved in ecology and conservation. Maybe they'll be looking after animals. Maybe we'll be culturing new David Attenboroughs or Dolly Attenboroughs for the future. We'd be really keen to track that.
There are definitely a couple that I've met that I'm thinking, you're definitely a future Attenborough. You can sort of see it already, can't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Can the children learn everything they need to know in this outdoor environment?
Essentially, yeah. I mean, we follow the Early Years Foundation stage, which is set from Ofsted, which is our governing body. So the way that we've set out our enabling environments, we have the opportunity for children to go into the mud kitchen. There's lots of wonderful mathematical opportunities for them. There's lots of collaboration which supports children's personal, social, emotional area. We also have a maths area, we have a literacy area, we have a polytunnel where children are learning how to care for seeds and nurturing them and doing experiments as well with seeds to see if they need light, if they need dark spaces to grow. So our children are so absorbed in their environment. When they go over to the woods, they've got all that wonderful physical development, but also collaboration when they're making dens together. You know, which pole do they need, which one will fit. There's lots of problem solving for our young children. So the environments that we create, are lots of them are open-ended, so that there's not always an end result, that the children have time to consolidate their learning within this environment.
What do you think that wider education can learn from this sort of outdoor learning?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. What we would like to do is we would like to open other nature nurseries, and we would like parents to have a choice in the future whether they send their child to an indoor nursery or whether they send their child to an outdoor nursery, because we can see all of the wonderful impacts that it's having on our children and families.
Not that long ago, it might have seemed almost a bit hippy-dippy or extreme, you know, the outdoor learning sort of concept, which is wild because it's only 10 generations of human beings that we've somehow confined ourselves to these indoor man-made structures as opposed to being out in nature, which is the best classroom in the world. But do you find that sometimes people sort of misjudge the concept of it?
I think so, and I think COVID has actually had some benefits. We noticed some of our parents, instead of taking their children to a ball pool environment or an indoor environment, that actually they've come and they met with us, and they say, yes, actually we really enjoy going to the woods, we go on beach walks, we're doing beach cleans. So I think the tide is turning. I think people are now, because of COVID and having lockdown, I think parents especially have seen the benefits of outdoor learning and are actually exposing the children to more of those natural events, going for a walk, going on the beach, finding shells, looking at some of the sea creatures on the beach as well.
And I think that's like such an incredible achievement and moment for the Nature Nursery to have had your outstanding Ofsted report recently, because it just really proves the point of actually, no, we're going above and beyond. Children are getting more than enough from this.
Exactly. I mean, we were really fortunate that we had a lovely Ofsted inspector who spent 7 hours with us on site, interviewed the staff, observed the children, and to have that external validation was really, really important for us. We know every single day that we are planning and providing outstanding experiences for our children. So it was wonderful to have an Ofsted inspector come in to see the wonderful activities, see the children's level of understanding. She actually commented a lot of our children. She was really surprised that actually some of their linguistic skills were at a junior school level. So it was wonderful, as I say, for the Ofsted inspector to see the children so purposefully engaged, and also to see our staff team are really highly experienced and passionate individuals. which makes the nature nursery come alive with the children.
Definitely, because I mean, I've only been here a couple of times, but every time I think, oh my goodness, it's just a magical place to be a part of. And you can tell how much it means to everyone, because I think it was in July, wasn't it? The nature nursery graduation I came to. You can just see, and I was only there, that was the first time I'd ever been to the nature nursery, and you can just tell how much it means to yourself, the rest of the staff, the children themselves, and the parents. It means a huge amount, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I actually think it's been life-changing. It's been life-changing for us as a team to be involved in this really exciting project. To have seen the children make those massive achievements and those developments, and to have actually seen the partnership that we have with our parents, that's really important for us. And actually on those types of events, when we've had Mother's Day, high tea, Daddy's brunch, the graduation, nativities, to see how much the parents enjoy coming to the nature nursery. And a lot of them have said it's actually their life now, and they've actually been really, really sad to be able to say goodbye when those children do go to school, because it's been such an important part of not just the children's lives, but their life as a family. And I think that is so impactful. What we have here is very, very special. We're trying to create those magical childhood memories that will impact on these young children into later life, into adult life, which will hopefully impact on their decisions, when they raise their own children. We're hoping that will impact those children as they get older as well.
To ask you, what are some of the examples of activities that you do with the children here?
And so we do a huge range of activities. So it's, some days we'll be making seed bombs with the children, maybe in the mud kitchen. Sometimes we're making pizzas using our pizza oven in the shelter. We're teaching the children really important life skills. So for instance, we have a log burner in the yurt. So in those winter months, the children help us chop the wood. They use all of the wood and you find all the kindling, the smallest, the biggest, and they help us light the fire. So they're learning about those really important core skills. The children have the opportunity to run free in the meadow. We've got the lovely orchard that's starting to grow. We have a lovely glamping tent that the children can go into, relax and read stories. We have the polytunnel where the children throughout the whole year learn about the vegetables will grow at certain different times. We also have obviously the woods where the children again are using real tools. So the children are able to use real bow saws and able to climb trees and learn important forest school learning from their, you know, learning how to cook over a campfire, all of those wonderful things. We also have the opportunity to also use the pond up by the farmhouse as well. So we have so many opportunities in our kind of three zones between the Badger's Garden, the meadow and the woods, but we also can go down to the bird hide. We take the children down to a bird hide on a regular basis so they can see the wading birds over the estuary, and we also can use the pond up by the farmhouse as well.
The last question I wanted to ask you is, if the children could take anything away from their experience at the nature nursery, what would you want it to be?
I think it's about the nurturing the environment. So understanding, like I said before, about sustainability as well. A lot of our children do value the water as well. So if they see some of their friends wasting water, they do get quite emotional with their friends and say, actually, water is precious. So I think it's around that lifelong love of nature and developing that and nurturing the environment that they're within.
Next up, we're going to hear from Patrick Barkham, who is a writer for The Guardian. And the reason I've asked him on today's episode is because he's written a collection of wildlife-related books. The one that's particularly relevant on today's podcast is his book, Wild Child, Coming Home to Nature. And it's a brilliant book. It's all about his experiences as a father, as a forest school volunteer, and why he thinks that outdoor learning is so important. So without further ado, we're going to hear Patrick's extract from the book, and then he's going to be telling us why he thinks it's so important that children explore their outdoor environments and connect with nature.
Hello, I'm Patrick Barkham. Here's a little extract from Wild Child Coming Home to Nature. I should just say at this point, I've got three children. I've got twins, Esme and Millie, and a younger son called Ted. And at this point, my twins, Esme and Millie, were about 5 and Ted was 3. My new garden pond is not an unequivocal triumph during a heat wave. My sole yellow flag iris dies. Two dead frogs appear floating, face down in the water like murder victims. Soon afterwards, we receive a surprising visitor. The most surprising thing is I spot it before the children. A head glides across the pond. I idly follow it as I clear tea from the kitchen table. I assume the head is a frog's, but it keeps sliding out of the water, a newt. But then the head keeps coming. What? A snake! A snake in the pond! Grass snake in the pond, I yell. At least, I think it is. Millie, Esme, Ted and I watch it from the window. We have a fine view. It has a pursed expression on its face, as if set in disapproval, and a dainty collar of black and white around its green neck. Definitely a grass snake. I lift the children up so they can see it better. Esme has vanished. Suddenly she appears outside the kitchen window, darting, reaching. She's grabbed the snake. She's holding it up. I run out of the door and round the corner. Esme is caressing the snake, utterly delighted, its tail wrapped tight around her wrist. I'm disconcerted by what she's done, by her confidence, her skill, her fearlessness. The snake seems fine, thank goodness, and emits a pungent smell as a deterrent. Rotten onions, says Esme, with a child's typical precision. After we've admired it, she releases it into the pond and it slides away rapidly. We hope there's a nest somewhere, and we hope we haven't scared it away from our pond, for the world of snakes has gained a fan for life. When my dad was 7, he used to disappear for the whole day and wander off into the Somerset countryside and dig tunnels into bales of hay and catch butterflies and look at birds' nests, and then he'd come home for tea. And having roamed maybe 8 miles in a day. When I was a kid growing up in rural Norfolk in the 1980s and early 1990s, I would go out on my own, age 10, and cycle 3 miles to go and visit a particularly good conker tree. And it was when I realised that my 11-year-old twins have no such freedoms today and do none of that kind of roaming that I started to write and research Wild Child, which is a book about children and nature and parents and what we can all do to give our children that priceless opportunity to spend more time in the wild world, with all the benefits that we know it gives us as adults and obviously gives to children as well. So my kids have grown up in rural Norfolk in a village not unlike the one that I grew up in, and yet they've had no such roaming freedom. I've walked them to school almost every day. They've never done that journey on their own because the roads are so busy now with traffic, with cars. There's a brilliant sociologist called Maya Hillman who studied children walking to school. And back in the 1970s, a huge quantity of children, about 80% of 7 and 8 year olds, walked to school on their own without the presence of adults around them. By the 1990s, that proportion of sort of 8 year olds who were walking to school unaccompanied by adults was down to barely 10% of children. Today I'd be surprised if there's any children who are aged 8 and 9 and walk to school without the watchful eye of a grown-up beside them. And you might think, why does that matter, that children can't walk to school unaccompanied by adults anymore? We've certainly become a more risk-averse society, but in doing so we've made society much safer for our children, and there are fewer dangers than there were. But as this sociologist Maya Hillman points out, we've actually prioritised the rights of powerful adults who drive cars over the rights of the most vulnerable group in society, our children. So we've enabled cars to dominate roads in a way that would be kind of inconceivable to people 50 years ago or 100 years ago. Today, roads, public highways, remember most of them, are designed for people on foot and on bikes as well as motorised transport. Today, they're dominated by those motor vehicles. And that's one clear reason why a child's right to roam has been curtailed so radically. What can we do about it? Well, there's lots of amazing things going on already, and I'm sure many of you know about those things, and people like Essex Wildlife Trust are doing great work in providing opportunities for children to engage with nature, as are many other wildlife trusts across the country. And there's loads of great things happening at grassroots level without any support from government. Over the course of the last 20 years, we've seen a great surge in the forest schools movement, in the growth of outdoor nurseries, which are designed specifically for preschoolers usually, in which they're outdoors in all weathers, and they might have a fire circle and perhaps a little yurt for the rainiest of days. But they're essentially learning, playing, and learning through play outdoors in an environment where they can be freer. And I spent 2 years volunteering once a week at a local forest school near me in Norfolk for my book Wild Child, and it was a revelatory experience. It was so interesting to see how these children aged 2 upwards, and there were slightly older kids who'd come in, flexi schoolers, as they're termed, who do maybe 4 days a week in primary school and 1 day a week at a forest school. So there were kids up to the age of 8 and 9, but mostly 3, 4, 5 year olds, preschoolers. And it was a revelation seeing how they are outdoors. Quite a few of these kids had special needs. Some had autism or Asperger's. And it was particularly interesting how these very sensitive children, who are particularly sensitive to noise and to overstimulus. So a crowded classroom is full of sort of plastic objects is almost the worst environment for a child with those kind of sensitivities. And yet in an outdoor environment, there's something intrinsically calming about being outdoors, the space. And so the noise that you make just kind of disappears on the wind, the noise of other children disappears on the wind. And it was really interesting to see kids, even with these extra sensitivities, being so calm and so playful in these natural environments with trees around them, with grass to run through and mini beasts to look at, and always something going on in this environment, but not stressful things, not things involving possessions and toys, not things that can be fought over, things that are there and plentiful and free, like sticks. It's amazing how many uses a child will put a stick to. Obviously, small boys will use sticks as guns or to poke people, and that's inevitable. And we had a policy at Forest School of not allowing sticks to be used as guns, but it was all very free play, and it astonished me how rarely I discovered children who were really upset and how rarely I heard tears. In my 2 years of volunteering at Forest School, I think I saw children in tears maybe on 2 or 3 occasions. And I think on 2 of those occasions, it was because they didn't have appropriate clothing, so they weren't warm enough, so they were cold and unhappy. And obviously that's a bad state of affairs. And forest schools tend to have backup coats and things to keep children warm. So what was amazing was seeing how creative and joyful children were in a more natural environment, and how they embrace mud and puddles and wet and adverse conditions, if you like, and how they responded with what I would call joy to the simple things of an outdoor life. blue tits feeding their young in a little bird box, or the march of a lesser stag beetle across the soil. Very simple, very ordinary things, and yet things that bring joy and happiness and peace and pleasure and learning to children, but also to us adults too. So that growth of forest schools, they're all around us. Many take kids via the government subsidy for nursery places, so i.e. you can get a free place there. It's not that they're all fee-paying schools by any means. They take ordinary kids on the 18 hours free a week you get with nursery school education. So that's been a really positive development, and there are other positive things happening too. But I think there are more things that we can do, and one is to reclaim our streets from the car. And we might look at, there's charities and groups doing this across the country on a very street by street level, arranging free play Sundays, a sort of one Sunday a month in some areas where there's no traffic on a particular street in a city or a town, and that enables us to reclaim these public spaces for children to play safely. We saw in lockdown how amazing it was to have empty roads, and certainly around me I saw many more families cycling when those roads were so much quieter. So if we can get cars off our streets a bit more, I think that would really help. Another thing I think we can all campaign for is to see it as a right, a modern day human right, for everyone to have accessible green space, high quality green space within a kilometre of home, within walking distance of home. Why not? Why not have this? And, you know, we are an urban people. More than 80% of us live in cities and towns. Why not have access to high quality urban green space within walking distance or cycling distance as a modern day human right? This is a kind of universally popular policy. You'd think the Conservatives could embrace it, as well as Labour and the Green Party and the Lib Dems. Everyone could embrace it. And again, that's something we can push for very much at grassroots level and get those green spaces protected, created, recreated and used better, and so we can all have green space in our lives. I think the final thing perhaps we could do is to create more outdoor education. And that's already happening, but I think we could have more of it. And I think if us parents engage with our schools and get those barren looking playing fields turned over to growing vegetables, to having wildflower areas. Loads of schools are doing brilliant things with this already. But as parents and teachers, maybe we can push a bit more. It's still happening on a school by school basis, and it would be great to get something firmer in the national curriculum and push for policy change as well, because then all these changes would happen that are happening. The positive developments that are happening would happen so much more quickly. But I hope in the meantime that you as parents, grandparents, teachers, you're able just to facilitate children to have free play in nature. I think this is the greatest gift we can give them. Children don't need interpretation. Obviously it's lovely to have a nature mentor, to have experts alongside children to help identify things, but I think the most important thing is that children learn to discover wild green space and nature for themselves. Get out in it, play in it, muck around in it, mess around in it, and have it around them. And it doesn't really matter if children turn away from nature in their teenage years. Of course many will, because it's still seen as a kind of uncool thing. But if they've got that sort of natural nature literacy, if they've had exposure to green space in the first 10 years, they're going to have a basic level of comfort with it, which, and so it's something that they're going to return to in adult life, return to, treasure, look after, protect and enjoy and pass on to the next generation, hopefully in a better state than we've passed it on. Thanks very much for listening, and enjoy wild nature around you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Wildlife Explorer podcast. Now, as you heard from Mel, parents are at the heart of what we do at the Nature Nursery. And so I thought I would let a parent sign us out today. So here is Lucy with her experience of the Nature Nursery. Goodbye.
I am mum of Rosie, who goes to the next nursery. She's been going for the last 7 months. And I can honestly say that she has trained so much in that 7 months. And she absolutely loves introducing me to all her new friends and all the amazing staff that work there and everything that has happened from drop-off to pick-up. It is the perfect place for any outgoing, curious little child that wants to explore and learn new things. We are always looking forward to hearing from the staff and seeing what she has been up to, whether that is by them sending us pictures or videos or just chatting at the gate to see how their day's been and how Rosie's day's been. I do think every child should experience somewhere like the nature nursery. They have time to connect with nature, which is so special and so important. Also, they have so much space for learning and developing, and the mixed ages means that they have role models there and peer-to-peer learning, and it's not just the staff teaching them, it's the older children teaching them. And it's all hands-on learning experience. And it's all messy, muddy, watery stuff as well, which she adores. And it happens all year. So it is all weathers, hot, sunny, cold, wet, windy, and all seasons. So they get to experience everything and they get to be prepared for every day and not just the sunny days. So yeah, Rosie absolutely loves it and I love taking her there as well.